They got a rhythm with the two left feet and a big brass band on a moonlit street, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. It's got a rhythm and it's all you need. So everybody come and rock your thing. Take it down to the early threes when the champagne blow like a river stream, yeah.
Not too bad, not too bad.
Good to hear your voice.
And to hear yours. Like I said, it's always wonderful to see you. So I got to see you,
yeah,
your
man.
Face for a few seconds. But yeah, I'm just, I mean, it's nutty because of it's election night. So that's like the talk of the town right now.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, it's getting, it's pretty tight. I don't know if it's a done deal yet. It's, hard to tell at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, Obama just won California, which is like 50.
Calling it in the other room. She's saying that NBC is
done. CNN's calling it. Obama wins.
Yeah,
he
won the majority of the swing states, and once he got California, it was like he jumped way ahead. But I mean, if you look at the map, it's all Romney. But all of the states that he got were like 3 electoral votes and so forth and whatever.
Yeah. CNN projects that Obama's going to take Ohio, so that would close it off for him then, I guess.
Yeah, I pretty much knew that was going to happen anyways. I mean, some of the stuff that Romney said was just like, "Come on, man!" Like.
Maybe. Okay.
Man, I really this whole little thread that I came out with after I saw that movie, The Inventions of Lying, pushed some buttons, man.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to clean up my email, and it's just like Twitter, 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 Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay, should we start?
Let's do that. Or do you have it ready? I mean, do you know where you're going?
Sure, I know where I'm going. I need to. I'm going to the dog park with Rihanna.
Great.
What? No, I'm not really. What episode is this? Is this 56?
I have no idea.
Was last week Cloud Atlas?
Yeah, last.
This is 56, yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Tim Murphy last week, was it?
No.
Tim Murphy's next week.
He's next, yeah.
Okay, so I have my, do you have the recorder running, Will?
Yes, recorder has been running.
Okay, so I'm going to count it down and we'll start. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
I was just about to bring up And Sybil, you're probably aware of this because I know that you were very much involved with the covering the Matrix, but wasn't there a woman whose last name is Stewart, like the royal family of the Scottish Stuarts, who claims actual authorship of the Matrix, and how either somebody had optioned a screenplay of hers and it got lost in the shuffle and then it resurfaced as the Matrix movie.
I read that somewhere with some white lady.
Right.
But I didn't know if that was like a myth or urban.
Her name just came back as in the Bride of God, Sophia. And I was
Don't get me started on that.
Right. Exactly. So as a former Nazi myself, because I identified with the Ophites, who as opposed to viewing the serpent in the garden as an adversary or the incarnation of evil, view the serpent as enlightenment. And Sophia in Gnosticism is Pistis Sophia is the bride of God. So
right. Okay. Wait. You're going way fast as usual. I need to catch up.
That's my mind. I'm sorry.
Don't slow down.
I need to catch up because you said a lot of important things there. First off,
I'm sorry.
No need to apologize because I absolutely love.
But so Jesus is the devil. They're the same guy.
Right.
It's like the difference between fall and spring. And so right now
So. One of the interesting things you said was the lady who actually wrote it, and it's funny because the guys on Always Record were talking about this. It's this. She actually wrote Terminator 2, because she said the Matrix.
That's right.
The Matrix and the Terminator are basically the same theme, which I love because the sync they attaches them anyways. You know what I mean? Like in my head, they had been that anyways. But I had just found out about her last week, and she.
Wow.
That's why she named her John Connors is because she was very Christian orientated too.
Mm-hmm.
But what's also interesting is the agnostic way of thinking is that there was Sophia who basically got zapped and impregnated by God. The baby came out and it was basically a monster. They threw it down into this
mud. Right, Yaldabaoth, yes.
Right.
Yaldabaoth. Uh-huh. And he in turn created the physical universe.
Right, because
and
he thinks he's the only creator. He thinks he's the only one. Sophia comes down because to tell the creation that, basically it's the snake in the tree. So that totally is weird.
Snake
because
in the tree, will you elucidate that, Will?
Well, Sophia is the snake in the tree. She goes down to teach them about sex, the people that the little mud baby had created. And so the true creator or the truth of the creation we're getting through the tree of knowledge. But it's really hard if you have a Christian background to understand that because the first thing is you think is, "Oh, that's exactly what the devil would say."
And would want us to think.
Right, exactly. And it all has to do with sex. Sex being evil or sex being good. And the power of sex and the energy of sex. And then you get into orgone energy.
And also when you get into the Church of Thelema, or Thelema, however you pronounce
right.
it. I'm always mispronouncing things. I accidentally mispronounce ho-opano-opano, ho-opano-opano, especially during our broadcast back in May. I'm like, oh, my God, I spoke with my Hawaiian friends, and they're like, no, you mispronounced it on a day. I'm like, oh, no. So, but at any rate, in Thelema or Thelema, the Crowley people, okay, you've got the Golden Dawn. Sex is a means of accelerated consciousness. Okay, and it's not just about procreation or recreation. It is about a catalyst in elevating your awareness. And that also, to me, was part of the thing behind the Ophite Gnostic view of the world, that everyone has basically the same components, so everyone, therefore, is capable of the same thing. It's just how much time, quote unquote, do you give yourself to learn? I think with me, it's a lifelong process. As an elf, I've had to be very my big lesson in life is discernment, which is making the distinction between what is just your imagination, what are your hopes and fears, and what is really confronting itself as when you are visited by otherworldly entities, whom you can either call to yourself through various ritual means or just come to you because you're on a similar frequency. It's like the old adage, water seeks its own level. It's like things are going to come to you when you're looking for them. And then also that other adage, when a student is ready, the teacher appears. And it is so, so true, because I've found, as with sync, that first mind-blowing sync that I'd experienced in 1976, I was between high school and college. And I'm like, I have to keep looking. This is something hugely important. More people have to look for these synchronicities, and they teach us. They are signposts. We have to listen. So I kept, of course, talking about them, and most of the people I spoke to about them thought I was nuts. Like most of us, when we notice things and it's so out of the ordinary, and we're trying to get other people to be aware, they're like, basically you're crazy. But we know better, you know?
And I wonder if that's not why people aren't liking this film, is because it does challenge linear thinking a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it challenges it a lot, yeah, and if you don't have any basis for that, it's really just, it makes you feel, you know, whenever you come up against something that you just haven't really thought of before and just challenges your basic way of thinking, it's going to feel uncomfortable at first. But then I was heartened by the fact that several people in the movie, some people sitting next to me, they were seeing it for like the second and third times. They were coming back. So I felt good about that because they weren't giving up. They weren't just saying, okay, I don't get this. They were like coming back and trying to understand, because something's making them feel something important in here that I need to get that I'm not getting. Let me come back and try again. And so that gave me a lot of hope, because that's what I want to see people doing. Don't just give up because you don't understand. Just keep coming back and coming back.
I even remember when you had first mentioned, you were like, yo, people, why isn't this film, which is so important, showing in this part of town?
Oh, I was upset about that, you know.
Yeah.
I went on a little Facebook rant, and then when the movie started, I said, oh, maybe this is why, because the whole racism, slavery thing they had going in there.
Yep.
But that's
yeah,
not a reason that, not to show it. I mean, that's historical information. And
exactly. Especially some of us, like me, who, on my dad's side of the family, I am descended from Scots Irish slaves. Okay, there's a whole lot of white slavery history going on in this country that's sort of swept under the carpet, too. The Scots-Irish were also known as the Ulster Scots, who were actually brought over from Scotland to Ulster, Ireland, and essentially raised for a few generations in, like, these stone hovels to provide labor force for the British royals. And finally, we were like, enough of this.
Exactly, because slavery was rampant in a lot of different societies and cultures, you know, not just African-American people. And so there, to me, is no reason to – this is very, very important. I was very upset about that, because this is a very important movie that everyone needs to see. And so to withhold it from certain areas of town, because I guess, what do you think, people are going to get upset? I mean, like, people don't read, like, we don't know history. I mean, we lived through slavery. I can't stand to watch a few scenes of it on a movie and understand that it's historical context. To me, that's offensive and kind of – I know it's really like degrading to me.
Well, it seems
that, like, I actually didn't watch this movie without getting upset, because it shows some historical context.
The central story, or I mean, the heart of the thing has to be Somni, right? And basically, she is not even a real person.
Right.
But like, she is the heart of the thing. Like.
And I wanted to say something too, Beck, just to bring back about Sister Sophia, because, you know, I love that text. It's a Gnostic text. It's basically like Jesus, after he got resurrected, supposedly comes back and is there for like 11 days explaining a lot of things to his disciples about why he came and how he came and how the universe, structure of the universe. And so, you know, I really enjoy reading it. And I felt like there's a lot of the Gnosticism in this movie, particularly the person where – when you get to the future with the replicants, and at the point when they take Somni to show her, you know, what's actually going on when they're telling them they're going to heaven and everything, and they're actually being recycled and fed.
Right. And then in one of the other stories, the guy said, Soylent Green is people. It's like...
Right.
You know, it's...
When they're getting out of the...
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's like straight out of Fifth of Sophia, and it's, and you can see the same theme in the movie Prometheus, which I didn't really like that movie that much, but it was also talking about the same thing with that black slime. It's the same thing, because in the Fifth of Sophia, Jesus is explaining how, you know, he's just basically coming down through the different levels of time and dimensions, and when he gets to ours, he finds the leaders, which are called the Archons. They are going to get the natural order of things because they don't want to give up. Because everything changes, and so they will cycle out of power. You know, they might be in leadership now, but they will cycle out of power. The same thing you see in the movie where people in different lifetimes, you're in different positions, you know, but they didn't want to cycle out. They want to stay in the time frame where they were in leadership. And so they started forming people out of their basically waste materials, and creating basically replicants that didn't necessarily have souls, they kept recycling them over and over again, and that's not what's supposed to happen. So you see that with the black slime in Prometheus, and then you see the same thing in this movie in Cloud Atlas with them recycling the replicants and using them as a slave labor force. And so that's basically exactly what is said in the Pits of Sophia. You know, if you sit there and read it, it's basically exactly as it's described, which was fascinating to me. Only because I've read it.
and also, as a wonderful adjunct to what you're saying, Sybil, in the Hellenic pantheon, the gods themselves were supposed to have blood that was deep black, that was the color of that black slime that generated all Earth life, and it was referred to as ichor, I-C-H-O-R. So that in and of itself, I'm like, oh, so this is the blood of the gods. The blood of the gods is coming to Earth.
Right, it's part of them. Because when I'm saying waste material, it's divine waste, though, so it's not like waste
right,
of trash.
Right,
we
right.
Have. It's like divine, even divine waste is divine. And so in the Pits of Sophia, that's what Jesus is trying to tell them, that you're made of divine material. It doesn't matter what part of the material is, it still has the light in it. And that's
exactly,
something that
exactly,
that
exactly.
In the movie, you're talking to, what's the guy, H-U... I don't know, the guy that comes and saves her at the end when she's saying it doesn't matter whether you're pure blood or replicant, we're all the
right,
same.
Right, exactly, because we're all the same. And
right.
That's also, that goes back to part of the mission of the King of Kings. I believe he had said, oh, what was it? Because I was raised Episcopalian, so we had a lot of songs to learn. It's very musically oriented. And my father ended up becoming Catholic. My mother was always German. So she was Lutheran. But there's something in the Bible about Christ actually saying part of his ministry was to come to earth and incarnate so that we, too, would do works greater than his. And I'm like, well, see, that just goes to show that in the most base element, you still have that divine spark.
Exactly.
And we can all just... set that fire.
Yeah.
You know, we're all sparks. So
yeah. As opposed to the thinking that a lot of people have here, and like, you know, Hugo Weaving's character was pushing for that there's this natural order, and, you know, the reason for differences is because if you look this way, you're supposed to be in this, you know, you're supposed to be a slave or you're supposed to be a servant. If you look this way and you're this way, you know, that's not the case at all. All that is a lie.
Well, so that's what's fascinating about the Wachowskis is that, you know, we can have a really high-minded spiritual discussion about like the esoteric elements or the philosophic construction of this movie. But at the same time, it's like a call to embodied action. You know, so guess what? You know, the world is a system, and we are pieces in that system, but we can actually affect the system and create the paradise on Earth that we know it is.
Exactly.
That's what's fascinating about the Wachowskis to me, is that it's not about necessarily transcending material, but becoming more enlightened material and creating the kind of worlds that we actually want to inhabit.
Right, just being what we already are. And I think part of the, okay, one of the parts of the movie that I enjoyed the most, I have to mention this, is the guy, the Timothy Cavendish, who was the publisher, and he was all, you know, he was like kind of like this goofy,
yeah,
goofy guy character, but if you really think about it, he is the one, he actually saved humanity, in a way, because by writing that silly script or silly movie that ended up getting turned into a movie, and then he had penned that line, "I will not be subjected to criminal right. abuse," which is actually a really, like, goofy scene in this really, like, B-movie. But that is the scene, that is the movie that ended up being on this person's video iPod in the future that they were watching, and it just got stuck on that one scene, and it inspired, you know, Somni451 and
a
other people,
revolution.
"I will not be subjected to criminal
yeah.
abuse." And it was just like, I love that, because to me, that's how sync is. A lot of times it's really, like, kind of goofy and whimsical a lot of times, and you don't, it can come from anywhere. Like, I was watching, like, the Smurfs, one of my, the Smurfs movie was so deep to me, and it's all kinds of stuff. So it's like, you can be watching anything. It'll come through anywhere. And I really love that part of the movie. And the fact that his name was Timothy, it kind of reminded me of, like, when we were talking about, "Oh, I like the Timothy Green," too, kind of similar thing, where this guy, he's like this unlikely hero, you know, but he ends up really being a hero of just, and it also shows how everybody has a part. You never know how some little thing you said or some little thing you do can really just, like, somebody else could hear it and or see it, and it could change the world just like that.
There's the quote that it seems like they might have said it a few times, but it seems like when Susan Sarandon said it, it's like in my head, where she says, "Our lives are not our own." And so, I mean, as far as Western civilization goes, ownership is one of our big stumbling blocks, where we think we own the earth, and we think we own our spouse or our children, and then we create these tiny little islands of stagnation where we control this thing that we, you know, we deem separate that's not separate, and then control it because we think it's ours somehow. But we don't even own ourselves. You know,
because we are in so many ways beholden to so many other people who influence us as we influence other people.
Exactly.
Right.
And everything is part of a cohesive whole, even though we may not see it that way. But, I mean, those of us, especially in the sync community, realize how integral we all are in the greater scheme of things. And that is what sync helps kind of be the mortar between each one of us being the stones in the great structure that is life. You know, I mean, I'm using metaphors now, but I mean, it's really, really important that we realize how divine each and every one of us really is.
Lost, the TV show, also did a really good job of communicating that, how it seemed like when people were at their lowest or, you know, at various points in their own little hero arc, that their actions were communicating with other people's actions that would eventually come back to them, the, you know, karmic stuff. So that was one element in the film that I wondered about, is how, you know, each of the different souls were becoming, but they also, you know, the film showed both negative actions and positive actions and how that contributed to, you know, a greater tapestry, I guess. Will and I are both in the same time zone.
I see.
He's in Denver and I'm in Boise.
Right. I thought Idaho, right. That's where that wonderful shindig was over the summer, right? Where you had all the people over and...
The think cabin, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. I'm glad you guys did that.
It
that
really,
was great.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard because it's kind of like Hogwarts, where all of a sudden, well, there's all these people that understand you. And I actually had, my wife came and one of my good friends for a night, and you could tell that they weren't, they didn't get their Hogwarts letters.
Oh.
They were daring to have conversations with people that they just couldn't quite make that mental jump. As far as, these people are nuts.
Right.
They're my people.
Right. They're people. They're people still from my old neighborhood in Bronxville, New York, who think I'm absolutely clinical. But that's because they're just not on the same plateau that we all are. So, hey, it's just one of those things. You know, you just can't. I used to be so concerned with what the fuck other people thought of me. And now I'm just like, whatever. You know?
Well, amen to that.
Thank you, because you just can't.
It doesn't matter.
You can't let yourself be drawn down. So I'm just like barreling ahead. But you mentioned that connection, you know, between the Think Cabin and Hogwarts. There's also a wonderful writer of magical realism, Lev Grossman, who the third in the trilogy hasn't come out. But if you do a search for break bills, College of Magical Pedagogy, which is supposed to, it's fictional, but it's supposed to exist in the lower Hudson River Valley of New York State. And they've just put up these wards and these glamours so that the rest of the population can't even perceive that it's there. And that's where they actually hand pick students who are observed throughout their life to be the new magi and the new magistras. And then they send them through a Stargate, and then just, boom, you're like walking down the street in Brooklyn, and then the next thing you know, you're on the lawn at Breakbills. And they actually, to promote the novels by Lev Grossman, first one is The Magicians, the second one is The Magician King, and he's working on the third. If you do a search for Breakbills, you'll actually find this lavish thaw kind of website for the school itself and all the different departments that it has and the different curriculums. And it's like, oh, that's great. And one of the interesting things, this is something that Alan had brought up, that his wife Melissa's name means bee. And there's all this bee imagery in my life. And they're the three, one of the things on my family coat of arms is the three golden honeybees of the Merovingians, who were the sorcerer kings of France during the Middle Ages. So I'm descended from them on my dad's side, and the funny thing is that the logo for Breakbills College of Magical Pedagogy is the honeybee. So there's another sink. And they were viewed as the original messengers of the gods also. And honey was a kind of distillation of the wisdom, and all of that was encapsulated into the product that they made. So it just keeps going. It doesn't stop.
I know. I wanted to ask you guys what you thought about the scene in the movie where, well, I guess actually the part about the guy Frobisher where he's composing the actual Cloud Atlas Symphony music.
Right.
And then that scene in the movie, which I just really dug the scene where the two guys, the lovers, were, well, I guess he was dreaming when he was on the train, but then they were in this room and they were breaking the...
Right, right.
China.
They were like bulls in a china shop.
Scattering all
exactly.
Of, yeah, and it was just like, but to me, it's like that whole symbolism of the music itself, of actually composing the music and the symphony, and then that scene right there, to me it meant like, okay, because basically like, it's talking about how the differences, why differences are necessary, why they're beautiful, because music is basically just a bunch of different notes, and the differences in the sounds of the notes is what makes music. Like if there was just one sound, there would be no music.
Right.
There has to be different sounds for it to be beautiful and come together in this symphony. And then when they were just like shattering those, the china, and it was just shattering all the different pieces, and it's just like, it's actually the sometimes the brokenness and the differences of the things, not when it, when you have, we're all one thing, but it's actually that thing, by that thing separating itself out into different pieces is what becomes beautiful, is what becomes art, is what becomes interactions, is what becomes life.
And that in and of itself, Sybil, is the interaction of all the different cosmic potentialities out there in the multiverse.
Exactly.
That are interacting with, that are and that is why music is truly the universal language. You know, they say that laughter is the music of the soul, but music itself is the universal language, because even when Hailey Berry's character came into the old used record store and she had phoned in to track down a copy, and then the guy who was there was like this old kind of like Woodstock hippie dude, and he was like, you know, there are only a handful of these extant in the world, and she's hearing it, and he apologizes for playing it, but he had wanted to, and he's like, I could just play this for hours, and she's like, you know, I'm sure I've heard this somewhere, and it was from her previous life as Yocasta. So it was, this film is such a hopeful beacon for me, that it will draw other people into this frequency, this wave that all of us are part of anyway, because we are all accelerated in the Think community, and we are aware of these things, and we're just kind of waiting for everybody else to catch up.
Yeah, so, it was really hopeful, because like with, I think Somni 451 was saying, you know, there's no really good or bad people, there's just only choices and decisions that you make, and every decision that you make and every person that you help, you know, you have an opportunity to change, you know, basically the past, present, and future all at one time. And so it was hopeful to me, because even in the, you know, whoever the worst character was, in the, I guess Hugo Weaving's character, even he, he's one decision away from, I mean, he could have chosen at any moment in point in time to do something differently and change his mind and become a whole different person, the same way Tom Hanks' character did.
But Tom Hanks' character would, I mean, viewed from like that point of good, bad, and all, in lots of the story arcs, he was making really poor decisions.
Yes.
Right. I mean, hence back when he was looking for proof on the beach in Australia or New Zealand, looking for teeth that were spat out by the cannibals, and he is the conniving bad doctor who is stealing all of this stuff from the guy who's taken ill, and then look at how he eventually evolved spiritually in his future lifetime. He became heroic in making better choices, even though he had become part of this kind of shamanistic primitive culture, who is then subsequently rescued by Halle Berry's character and brings them all off-world so that they can repopulate other galaxies. It's just, I think that that is so integral to the human species. I think everything is cyclic, and we have come full circle, and things are going to be spiral. See, that's my pet hypothesis, is that our migration through time is spiral, and that the reason why those of us in the Sync community are so accelerated is because we're at a curve in the spiral, which is a continuous line, but it's a spiral. We're at a curve in the spiral where we're directly below our ancestors, who are on the same plateau or the same frequency as us, and then we're directly above our descendants far, far in the future, who will also resonate, so to say, to the same frequency. And that's why there is this great resurgence in interest in metaphysics and archaic lore and things that actually coincide, despite the fact that they're thousands of years apart. I mean, you go back into ancient India and study the Mahabharatas and the Vedas, and they had spaceships. They were called Vimanas, and they weren't just vehicles to get you from this point to that point geographically. They could traverse through space-time. So that's another thing to look at, is the whole ancient astronauts theory. and interdimensional stuff. You know, it just plays throughout all the different literature, you know, and it so came together in this film that I'm just like, I'm not surprised it bombed at the box office this weekend, you know, but perhaps, you know, it can finally reach, because a lot of us out there who are accelerated like we in the sync community are, don't have a lot of money, you know, so maybe Cloud Atlas's time is still to come, but it didn't quite catch on this weekend. But it's gonna be something bigger than it has been this past week.
Yeah, well, it's gonna take time. I mean, to catch on, but it was the time to bring out this information, because I mean, I've been waiting. To me, I felt like this was like I finally got my Matrix sequel. I hate to say a sequel; it's not really necessarily a sequel, but just the next kind of like the next evolution from the Matrix. And see, they put the Matrix out there, and they let that hang out there for all these years, and people finally started getting that, and now they're going to put this next, you know, it's like they're spoon feeding you a little bit at a time for society through these movies.
Yes.
And I mean, because you can't get it all at once, you can't get it all in one big chunk. It's very overwhelming to change your whole life view, you know, of the
world. Yeah, that's sort of just like what Will was saying before, like I like within the context of like a minute I dropped like so many different points, and this is the way my mind is always over firing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are like, wait, could you slow down please? I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. And he's like, don't apologize.
Right, because I'm very cognizant of the fact that this is the way I think now, but two, three years ago I would have been lost. Like, I wouldn't have known what anyone was talking about. And so it's just because this is what I've been interested in myself, and I've been doing a lot of reading and studying. And that's why I can sit there and watch this and just completely understand, but I wouldn't have been able to do that before, so.
Right, right. We all, you know, we all have our own growth spurts. And I remember you had said in your show on 42 Minutes that there was, like, a state of, like, 5 years where you were just not doing much. And, you know, I was constantly afraid that if I do this kind of art, if I write this kind of stuff, somebody's going to come after me. You know, there's going to be like this agency to silence me, to squelch my output. And now I'm like, you know what? I'm living in a rural mountain community. I've got all the time in the world. My partner's a web builder for the government. So despite the fact that we look like hippie freaks, you know, we're like going back to like the archaic look of like guys with beards and long hair. I really think that hair is like a transceiver. It's a transmitter receiver. And, you know, maybe I'm crazy, but
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
It's there.
Because it connects us to the cosmos, you know? I mean, no other animal species has hair atop their head that won't stop growing, you know? And you can depict it in so many different ways. You could have coiffures and curls and dreads and whatever you want. But, I mean, I also was a Nichiren Soshu Buddhist for a while. And, you know, when you first enter the monastery, what's one of the first steps is to shave your head. That's because you're severing yourself from the life that you had led. So they're just different ways to appoint your own spiritual evolution through the hair. But one of the things is you go back in time and you look at the way the gods and goddesses were attired. And I'm seeing like connections between, you know, breastplates and staffs and holy diets, you know, and fasting and stuff, and they all equate to a kind of path of ascension, and we can all walk along that path, and we can all ascend on an individual basis. So everybody, you know, we've all got our own timelines, quote unquote. We've all got our own pacing. But I think that each and every one of us is capable of that.
Something interesting in the film that struck me is how Somni was a messianic figure, and you can't detract from that because she wasn't a real human. but she was going to lead the real human to a higher state of being.
The revolution against the system, yeah.
Yeah. But what's interesting is like Jesus, so Tom Hanks' civilization or, you know, his culture had taken that, who she was, you know, the symbol of who she was, and then kind of concretized and put, you know, these beliefs and all this structure around her and made her into something more than just what she was, you know, and it doesn't detract from it, but at the same time, it also created kind of this box that they were stuck in, where when the devil figure, or when Halle Berry was explaining how what she was, what she really was, it didn't diminish what she was, but at the same time, it those beliefs were too much, you know, like to undo those beliefs for Tom Hanks was, the fascinating thing to me is that we're at a similar point where the validity of the Judeo-Christian stories at the center of our culture are important, they're valid, they're good, but how concrete they've become, these metaphors, you know, and how threatening they are to try and unpack them a little bit. It doesn't diminish the stories, but people are holding on so tightly to what the stories, you know, all this baggage that we have to the stories. It's just fascinating that the Wachowskis were able to kind of do that. They were able to show how here's the Messiah. The Messiah really wasn't a Messiah, but most definitely was a Messiah, you know, and these are the beliefs that they attached to this Messiah and how challenging it was for Tom Hanks to face, you know, like you have to let go of these, the way you've concretized the symbol to get to the truth of what the symbol represents.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really powerful for people like myself who was raised in, you know, very strict religious background, to the point where, you know, you just, it's a fear that makes you hold on to the, to those beliefs, because you've been told if you don't do this, or you might, you know, you're going to go to hell, or if you don't do that, this is going to happen. And it's like you actually have this fear-based view of, if you believe in God, you have this fear-based view of God, as if he's just this...
Hence the word, hence the term God-fearing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that's what you're taught to do and what you're raised to do, and you have this idea of God as if he's this or he, she, it, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I say all that is. It's this figure that's out there, and it's just something that, you know, just removed from you. And then once I was older, and especially now, you know, just that I'm not necessarily a religious person, but have more spiritual beliefs, and then I started to see God more intimately. I have a much better relationship now where I see, it's actually seeing God as a, not as a person, but as a, just take for example, okay, Jesus Christ, and like what you were saying, he didn't come here, he didn't ask to be worshipped. He was actually coming here saying, I'm just like you, you're just like me. And this was his message. He wasn't coming here saying, hey, worship me and make a statue out of me and bow down to it. So once you actually see it in the other way, what his message actually was, it's more powerful to me. It's more meaningful to me. And so seeing Somni as like that, she's not the statue that they had up there on top of the mountain. She's actually was just a regular person who had a hard life and then overcame some things. That's more powerful to me than seeing her as a statue, a cold statue, you know, up there with some stories that we made up about her.
I found that biblical verse that I had tried to remember exactly. It's John 14:12, and it goes, "Verily, truly, I tell you, whosoever believeth in me shall do the works I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these, because I am of the Father." Right there. He came to teach us that we too can be co-creators with God.
He came to remind us.
Yes, exactly. To remind
us of what we are, already are.
Exactly.
Which
and
reminds me of something. Well, so we've had this guy, Dr. Jeffrey Kripal, on the show, and his thesis is that we're the authors of the impossible, that we're writing the story. And I know that recently, Sybil, you had sent out an email talking about how it struck you that we're at this magic moment where we can really flesh out the story that we want, if that's what we choose. And that's right in line with this movie, it seems to me.
Yes, because I even think it was very telling that a lot of the characters in the movie were writers in one form or another. Halle Berry's character was a writer. She was a reporter. Let's see, the composer, even the guy, Frobisher, was a composer. He was a writer, and he wrote music.
Sure.
Then you had the guy, Timothy Cavendish. He was a publisher. He published books. It was a very strong theme of writing, of having to write. The story has to be told. The story
and
has
also,
to be told. It has to be written.
Also that everyone is capable of that. View the Cavendish publisher guy was representing Tom Hanks's character as the boxer, who just squelched that argument with the critic who had panned the book, the autobiography. He just tosses him off the building.
That was so funny to me.
So I'm like, wait a minute, he's got to be a boxer because I saw that they'd put a appliance over his ear to make it look like it was a cauliflower ear. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Oh, he is, okay. And then you see it unfold, and then boom, the guy is like, he like risked his freedom just to make a point. So there again, the severity of making a choice that can ultimately remove you from society or catapult you past society and far, far beyond to the point where you're actually on other worlds other than Earth's mother. So all of that is just part of just a wonderful, like you said before, Douglas, the tapestry that we're all part of. You know,
yeah.
It's all, we're so integrally interwoven with all the other threads that each and every one of us lives, our lives are part of. It's overwhelming. It's mind-boggling, but at the same time,
striking to me, because at this point in the Sync community timeline or evolution, I mean, at first it was, hey, I think this way, and then enough of these oddballs kind of found each other. But now, you know, we're meeting, we're like experiencing each other in the flesh. We're like creating art together. It's bizarre how we're doing it. Like we're writing a new story. We're writing a new story. And they say you can't write a new story, but it feels like that we can if we want. If we want to write a new story, we can write one.
Yeah, and then you can tell it, and you can tell it to the children. And really, in Cloud Atlas, that's really what the movie's about. In the beginning, Tom Hanks was, well, you didn't know exactly who he was talking to in the beginning. He's telling the story.
Right.
And then at the end, you realize he's telling the story to this circle of the grandchildren.
Children.
And he's telling a whole new story to a whole new generation of children. They will not think the way that the old paradigm. They will think in the new paradigm. And it's all about how you tell the story. However, the stories that we tell ourselves are what we believe. The story
and
that
then
we teach our children know what they believe.
And the one little girl who was the last one to go in, and she's like, Grampy, which one is Earth? And then you're like, wait a minute,
you're not even Earth. Yeah, true. I was really excited about that. Like, wait a minute.
He's like, it's that blue one. And just last week, I had like done research. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm always thinking. Never stop thinking. And where, even as a little boy, I remember looking at the stars with my parents, and I'm like, which is my star? And I mean, already I had this profound concept as a two-year-old, where was the star? Where is the star that I came from? And my father's like, oh, it's that blue one. And I'm like, wait a minute. So then I did research last week. I'm like, blue star. It's like, a prominent blue star in the sky is Rigel, comprising the right star in Orion's belt. And there you have Orion again. And I'm like, wait a minute. Orion, in some myths, is a giant hunter who is pursuing the seven sisters, who are the Pleiades, to try to get a wife. And I'm like, the Pleiades? That's like, in Elvish lore, it is known as the net. It is a star net from which we descended to Earth and helped colonize Earth from our people who came from the Pleiades.
So I'm like, oh, it's like come full circle.
Ooh,
you know,
I
this is
that.
My, you know, this is just like a mythology, and yet they're pointers at the same time.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it made me feel like, too, I wasn't sure, but because they were not on Earth anymore, they were on this other planet, and they clearly had established some home there, it made me feel like that the signal that she sent out was heard, and somebody found them and helped them find a place to move to. Because before, that was the whole point. They didn't have a home, and they were trying to send out a signal. I guess they were living on that ship, and they were trying to send out a signal, trying to find somewhere else
right,
to go.
Right, right. They were orbiting. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But at the end of the movie, they were actually on the planet, living on this planet. And so that means somebody heard the signal and found them.
But that's the point of the movie. So, like, the criticism is, like, it's just a big mess. There's too many themes that doesn't connect. And it's like, what do you mean it doesn't connect? I mean, that's the theme, that unless you take that leap of faith and put yourself out there, that other person can't hear you.
Right.
Exactly.
They can't hear you unless you're like, so it was a little troubling when the one character, I really liked the composer character, but he killed himself. But somehow, you know, he was saying how courageous that act was, that it's not
a sin, or it's not something bad.
I mean, he is right. It's really, that takes so much courage to kill yourself. But at the same time, you know, we're going to put our judgments, you know, on any action.
Yeah, and I think that was the thing in the movie, too. Insomni 451 was saying that in the movie, too, when she died, death is just a door. Death is but a door. Because it's our concept of death. We believe that death is like, oh, it's this horrible thing, it's this ending, and it's not, you know, but then if you believe it differently, it's not an ending, it's actually just a transport to another, you know, pop up somewhere else. Then yeah. Death takes on a whole other meaning, and suicide takes on a whole other meaning, because you're actually just moving on to something else.
I would just like to drop into the conversation that I'm a survivor of a suicide attempt in 1986. I drank myself to death. And in context of my actions, I'm really glad that they saved me. Because here I am now, you know, I'm part of the Sync community, I'm part of the Elvish community, I'm part of the outsider art community, I'm part of the naturopathic healing community, and all of these other things. And had I not made that transition, now a lot of people, one of the initiations of becoming a shaman, which I'm not, or a seer, which I am, because I do have the second sight, is to conquer death and come back. I wouldn't recommend it because there is that part element of fallibility versus infallibility, and some people might fail. But I was completely unaware. I was trying to kill myself. But with the history behind my actions of abject despair and alcohol abuse, which I've overcome, yeah, it was definitely a suicide attempt. But they wouldn't release me from hospital until I signed this waiver that said I'm going to go into a program. And just to get myself discharged, I said yes, and I didn't for another 10 years. When I looked around, I was like, holy fucking shit, I really have to stop drinking now. And the funny thing is, one of my spiritual mentors, R.J. Stewart, there's that name Stewart again, he said, you want to turn off the site, drink a lot. Preferably whiskey, something really hard. Or if you can't stomach alcohol, eat a heavy meal. And sure enough, when your body is overtaxed and it has to worry about itself failing, then it shuts off the spiritual sight. But, you know, ghosts that I've seen, they look like regular people. None of this Hollywood movie depiction of transparent stuff. They're there as much as anyone else who is alive is there. It's other entities who were never human to me that have an odd appearance or are luminescent. Or you'll see it in my chapter for the Sync Book 2,
a bridge between the three worlds. When I've given a few of my experiences in context of sync, mm-hmm. but hey, you know,
yeah, I appreciate you saying that too, because I think, to be clear, no one's saying like suicide is great and go do that. No, it's just that I just think just the fact that death is not an end, even if something like that happens, it doesn't have to be an end, because
it never is.
Nothing ends.
Nothing ends.
Nothing ever
ends. Continues. Everything continues on, and takes another form. I mean, and not all of us come back again. Some of us get lost. Some of us ascend. Some of us assimilate. But those of us who have such deep connections as the individuals in Cloud Atlas, they keep coming back in other forms and other lives, playing different roles, and all of us do.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that some of us, it takes longer to have that realization that we are integral players, and we do all encapsulate that divine mission. But
well, guys, I have to sign off. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, great.
You guys.
Well, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I love talking to you. I can talk to you guys all day. I'm going to have to come to the next sync cabin so I can be around my people.
Exactly. So am I. Well, listen, Doug, say hello to everybody out in Des Moines.
Douglas?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm stuck off for a second.
No, I'm just saying we're going to bail. We're
okay,
wrapping
yeah,
up.
I'm there, too.
Yeah.
What was that last sentiment you just said?
Oh, we're all going to have to get together with the next sync cabin and be with our people.
I think so. I think so. It really is something to bring this conversation into. So that was something in the movie where the guy traveling to San Francisco on the ship, you know, the one that Tom Hanks was poisoning.
Right.
Oops, spoiler. He stumbles, you know, so he's at this plantation doing his father's business, you know, getting the contract for the souls of these people, you know, and he saves the one guy, eventually the one that was whipped. But it was that moment, you know, where the guy being whipped knew they were connected by the one look in the eye.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, so glad you mentioned that.
And so
yeah,
this is what
really
I've experienced when I went to Winnipeg, when everyone came to Seattle, you know, where we're sitting on a porch around a fire having this conversation face-to-face, there's something really real and authentic about the conversation then. So.
And also, I just have to drop that when you see his character starting the, you know, backing the abolition movement during the mid-19th century.
Exactly.
And his wife was played by the same actress who was Sonmi 451. Now I'm thinking, Sonmi 451, even though she was a fabricant, as they called them, even though she was a fabricant, she was still that same soul. So she was a catalyst in the next revolution in society, which was like, whatever, like 300, 400 years in the future.
Yeah, but that was really a powerful thing to me too. I'm glad you brought that up, because then when they were on the ship and then the slave was asking the guy, no, the guy was asking the slave, how did you know I was a friend, or why did you look at me like that? How did you recognize me? And he's saying, basically saying, all you need is eyes to see.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably when I first started crying in the movie, because it was just so powerful to me. Because when you get into sync and then you start to be able to see, you can see like you guys or some. I meet people now and I can look at them and I can see the. What I don't know, whatever frequency we're on or the light that we have, I can see it. I can mm-hmm. see it in them. They can see it in me. And sometimes, I mean, people just come up and start talking to me, just random.
Yep.
We just start talking. It's like we know each other. It's like we've known each other for a really long time. And I put a weird comment on Facebook yesterday. I think I was saying, has anyone met themselves yet?
Exactly. That's right. Exactly. I responded to that.
I'm starting to have some really weird experiences now where I'm just random people I'm meeting. And it's like I've known these people, but I don't know them. And there's no way I could know them, and they don't know me, and there's no way we could know each other like in this time period. But it's like we do. And so it's a very strange thing is going on right now. Time is wonky. Time is ending. It's according to Philip J. Dick. And so that's why you're starting to see all this phenomena right now, because it's ending and things are really just kind of like collapsing into one stream. And I've been experiencing some things, and I think other people will start to experience a lot of weird things too, like that. So you might meet yourself.
Okay.
And I'm going to call them.
All right, that's a perfect
stimulus.
Place
okay.
to
Great
start,
speaking
guys.
With you all, Doug. Yes, thank you.
No, I just want to put out there that probably, temporally speaking, if there's a next summer, I'll see you all at St. Kevin 3. It'll probably be in the Sierra Nevada Mountains.
There will be. There'll be another summer.
Or perhaps, you know, wherever. We'll see you all then.
All right, bye, guys.
That'd be great. All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye. So I don't think we went that well. No, because we were at four minutes when we started. And it is 44 because it's 48 point. That's fine, though. No problems. Thank you, Stefan. I know that.
Thanks for having me.
We always blow this. Is it Stefan or Stefan?
Either way, honestly.
I know, but what does your mom call you?
You told me Stefan one time, so that's what I say.
She calls me Baby Cakens.
No. Oh, she should have been calling you Baby Cakens the whole time.
I'd rather not. So the talks with Jake were kind of awesome. I mean, you spent probably the majority of your time with Jake. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. And it was... honestly, it was a real relief for me to spend time with Jake, and it was probably real good for him as well, because I found that we were, you know, having these really intense conversations about sync and the entire universe and everything in between. And I was, you know, I think it was like day two. I'm like, dude, am I like, you know, like. I've only been here 48 hours. Have I overstayed my welcome? Are we like, you know, like flogging a dead horse here? And like, he was like, hell no. And I just could, you know, it was just like finally getting to actually spend time with people who speak the same freaking language.
Yeah.
It was
that's what I experienced too.
Yeah.
And some of the conversations were like some of the most amazing that I've had, because here are people that I don't have to teach to see the world the way I see it. They understand the way I think, and then we can just go, and it's incredible, especially in person when you're there and you're present and you're like in that moment sharing the space together.
Yeah, no doubt. It's incredible. Going on sync walks with Jake and Jim was just super.
And they're madmen. And so, right, and then you catch that madness.
Oh, yeah, it's just infectious.
It's
infectious.
Silly,
and I think that, you know, we're headed towards that. I think that's, you know, and what were we doing, really? We were just walking around a city, you know what I mean? It wasn't like... we were on a treasure hunt, or that we were like, you know, on this.
Wait a minute, sync walks are treasure hunts, though.
Yeah, but there's no fucking map. This shit is just fucking. So it's like, and it was just amazing, amazing with those guys. I mean, fuck, I rock up to Winnipeg, hang around with Jake. We eventually. Meet up with Jim, and we're at Adena Circle, and there's a freaking powwow taking place. You know what I mean? It's just like
right. These,
you know, three sync heads get together for the first time. You know,
and there's a fucking powwow. It's like...
there's a literal, real deal powwow going on, and yeah, it was just amazing. Like the whole
powwow,
city was
sync powwow.
Yeah.
Did you bump into Strange Eye? Is he still, or is he keeping his?
Yeah, Yeah, I didn't get to catch up with the stranger.
It seems like he's been kind of low profile in the blog world too. So
yeah, he does his thing. Yeah, I mean he's there. He's there. He's just doing it in his own way, in his own style, and definitely feeling his vibe. And he's clearly still on the still picking up on those big veins, you know, those big mineral-rich sink veins that are out there. He's definitely got his eye on the barometer or on whatever technology he uses to pick up on it, because he's clearly on the ball. But no, I didn't get an opportunity. I got to meet Plantye, Brendan Amal, who's a young guy who popped in and out kind of the sink scene, but he's more of a Winnipeg dude and good friends with Jim and and he knows what's up in relation to the sync stuff. Definitely well versed and incredible, amazing. And it was so weird. I mean, like, I've been to New York City before, and that was a trip because, you know, I'm standing on the side of a street and there's a fire hydrant, you know, and I'm looking at this thing, and it's just eerily familiar. And, you know, that's clearly because of all of the popular culture that I've absorbed ever since, you know, the TV was turned on in front of me. And now with tech the way that it is, I roll up to Winnipeg, post Twitter, you know, and Instagram and Facebook, and I already know this place. I mean, I just walked out of the hostel and walked up the street, and I'm standing in front of, like, this place called Parlor, which is a place that I've seen those guys, you know, post up on Instagram as, you know, where they go and have coffee every now and again. And bang, I'm standing right in front of it. And I'm just like, wow. And then boom, you know, half an hour later, Jake's in there. He's actually there. And it's like weird. It's like the New York experience happening over again. But like all of the information that I've gathered on this little city has been gathered in within the last, say, you know, 5 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I had that same experience where it's not real until you go there and then you realize that it is real.
And then you come home and you're like, did I do that? Did that actually happen? Like, it's such a fucking time warp. And honestly, 3 weeks, it felt like fucking 3 years when I was there. I mean, I had so much on my plate. I was doing so much all the time, just like socially. It was just big. And I didn't feel like I was burning the candle at both ends or that time was running short or anything. It was just nice. And it was like this full dilation. Time just totally dilated for me. And yeah, massive window. It was awesome. Really cool. Really cool. So when it came to hanging with Jake and when it came to spending time with Jim, you know, I knew that I would, you know, I'd still had a few weeks under my belt or at least a few days or whatever. So, you know, those, just the interactions that we had weren't rushed. It was all just really chill, really nice, and taking it really easy.
Wonderful.
Mm. Mm.
All right,
yeah,
brother.
Definitely.
It's been fantastic talking to you.
Thanks for having me again, gentlemen, and I look forward to chatting with you again sometime soon.
Okay, well, I'm going to take what we did extra here and kind of splice it into the extras that we have from the Cloud Atlas. So, just so you know.
Cool. I'll be looking out for it.
All right. And much love, people.
Go. Much love. Go Bama. And, hope everything's still standing tomorrow morning, guys.
We'll see. Sometimes when I, like, look up what's going on in Australia, it seems like it's worse down there than it is here.
Anyway. I'd love to see the picture they paint. I'd love to see that, man. Man, this is just one big country town, man. We're all just kicking back. We're so far removed from anything. We're just like safe as, just chilling, man.
That's awesome.
Taking it easy.
Well, it's just, I mean, well, it just seems like everything is, I mean, with all the lockdowns on the herbs and spices and stuff in there. And
oh, my gosh.
But they can't, there's no way that you could control a place like Australia because it's so far removed that, I mean, like it's as far as like per capita, how many individuals you have, some people are like, you couldn't even get to them if you wanted to, right? Am I seeing
totally.
That?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like you couldn't do that where you're at, but I mean, let's face it. You're about to get 30,000 drones deployed into the sky, so it's going to be a little bit harder to hide. But but definitely, there's some pretty remote places out here, and you really don't have to travel that far to get there, because it really doesn't sprawl. I mean, everything's around the east, mostly around, you know, the eastern coast from like us. I guess sort of the east down to the southeast. Everything else is just a big landmass, and they tried to ban the national floral emblem of Australia. They tried to ban wattle, which is an acacia. There are species. It's actually what's used here to extract dimethyltryptamine, DMT, right? So the national emblem is loaded with DMT, and they tried to ban it, and they weren't able to do it. And let me tell you, man, I'm looking out the window now at like 50 of the damn things. They grow like weeds around here. I mean, sure, you know, you're going to be able to outlaw it and make it illegal for me to have it in my garden, dude. But like, as soon as I hit the road and I, you know, I start driving down the peninsula to head to my Mars place, I'm going to be surrounded with these damn things. I mean, what the hell are they going to do? Like, do what like our Japanese emperors did and like kill all of the cherry blossoms except for, you know, the one that meant something to them. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't do that. You know, you just can't. They're not going to be able to do it here anyway, like they would have been able to do in Japan with the cherry blossoms. So good luck. They're fighting. They're fighting themselves. They're, like I said, we are the plants, man. They're fighting themselves. It's, you know, it's
well said.
You can't win. You can't win it or lose it. They can't win it or lose it. They're just running around in a little funny circle. And I guess it's funny to watch because I mean, let's face it, with the whole weed thing, I mean, with 64 going through, I mean, that's just an admission that, you know, that this is a real thing and it actually means something to people. It actually means something to people. It means something to their lives. It actually enriches their lives. We're not just talking about sick, you know, technically sick people here, you know. It's, right. This isn't just a, you know, this isn't a top 10 single that we're talking about. We're talking about something real. And at the end of the day, they're gonna win. They're gonna win if anything is, you know. I mean, so yeah, it's great to see these changes taking place. And let's hope that it rolls on and other parts of the world start getting the wisdom under the belt, just like these other guys are.
All right. With that being
said,
damn it.
Yeah, it's enjoy it, man. Enjoy it, and much love and safe travels, and have a good one, gentlemen.
To you, sir.
All right.
All the very best.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye bye.
Feeling funny in my mind, Lord. I believe I'm fixing to die. Funny in my mind, Lord, I believe I'm fixing to die. Well, I don't mind dying, but I hate to leave my children crying. I'm walking kind of funny, Lord, I believe I'm fixing to die. Well, I don't mind dying, but I hate to leave my children crying.